It's now my pleasure to introduce our speaker, who drove all the way up here from Costa Mesa. Thank you so much. Pete B., right?
Okay. I'm Pete.
Hi, Pete.
Very grateful member of the Allen Family Group, so just got to get the ball rolling, get the nerves down, you know, and all that kind of good stuff. My home group is the Thursday night Corona Del Mar men's group in Corona Del Mar, and it's a lot smaller than this, I can assure you, so you must have a lot more sicker guys up here than we have down here. That's all I can tell you. And I'd like to thank Dave for inviting me up here. I was here about 2 or 3 years ago with my grand sponsor, Bernie. He spoke, and I said, man, if I ever get the opportunity to speak up there, it's like, that'd be awesome. But you have to be careful what you wish for, because here I am, and I'm jumping out of my skin, you know. But I was hanging around the AFG convention, minding my own business, and Dave shows up and says, what are you doing on June 5th? And, you know, that was 2 months ago. And now, of course, every day I'm thinking, for 2 months, what am I going to say? So I'd be so happy when this is over. And but I love Dave, and I know a lot of the guys in here, mostly through service. Service for me has been like the jumping off for program. I mean, if it wasn't for service, I wouldn't have had today what I have. And you know, we have an empty seat down here. My wife was going to show up, but she's not feeling well, and she's going to an Al-Anon retreat this weekend. Or I shouldn't say retreat, workshop. She's going to an Al-Anon workshop. So she decided to stay home and take care of herself. And she's an Al-Anon. She's not an alcoholic. It's this, my stepson that got us here. But we both grew up around a lot of drinking. And it's helped her a lot. In fact, she's been really, just a guiding light for me. I mean, I hate to say this, guys, but when a woman has an idea, it's usually a good idea. I should just go with it the first time. She was showing me this saying or this list that said, when you try something and you fail, just do it the way your wife told you to do it. And I tell you, she has been right on the money all the time, you know. But I love her. We have our ups and downs, even though we're both working a program. And she says I don't listen to her. And, you know, at least I think that's what she says. So I've learned a few tricks. So when I'm talking to her, I have to turn my back to the TV. Okay, I have to do a 180. I gotta get the distraction from behind her looking at the refrigerator or something so I can kind of focus in, because she's right. I mean, if there's something going on TV, if someone's swinging a golf club or something, my mind is over there, not here. But thanks to Al-Anon, it saved my marriage. It's absolutely saved my marriage. I met her before the alcoholism became a problem, and it was because of the son that was driving a wedge in our marriage, because we both had an answer, but it wasn't the same answer. But I'm kind of jumping ahead there. I grew up around, I'm not going to say alcoholism, there was a lot of drinking that affected me. No one said, hey, I'm an alcoholic. And by the way, happy birthday to the birthday people. Sorry, I missed that. That's kind of standard operation procedure. And also, I want to say, I'm not an alcoholic, but I love AA. So I'm going to say happy birthday to AA. June 10th is right around the corner. AA birthday. You know, it's awesome. And my wife and I, we love AA and Al-Anon. We just love recovery. I think it's just the most awesome thing. We went back to Founders Day, AA birthday, back in Akron, maybe 8 or 9 years ago. And it's really a spectacle. It's fantastic. A lot of good Al-Anon, a lot of Alateen, a lot of AA. You get to go to Dr. Bob's house and the gravesite and, you know, all of the Cyberling estate. It's just really fantastic. And then we were back in New York a few years ago. We went up to the AA Central office. And it's funny because you can stand in one of the offices and look out the window and see Grant's tomb, one of our biggest, you know, drinkers in the history, is right around the corner from AA headquarters. And we also went up to Stepping Stones and saw where Bill and Lois lived. And, you know, you sit at the breakfast table where Ebby brought the message to Bill. And I just think program is just the most fantastic thing. I just love it. But like I say, we both grew up around a lot of drinking. Her father, I only knew him for a few months before he died of alcoholism. And I grew up with two, I guess this is where the story begins. I grew up with two older brothers. They were 8 and 9 years older than me. So when I was 8 or 10, they were gone. You know, one was in the Coast Guard, the other one got married. And so I'm there with my sister. And, you know, I was just, I hate to say this, but, you know, everyone was on their own. You know, it was just like, you're on your own. And you got to make it for yourself. And work ethic was right on the top of the list there. You got to have a good work ethic. And my dad, we lived in Tustin, way down there. And he worked up in, we lived in Tustin, he worked in L.A. And so a lot of times between Monday and Friday, I didn't get a chance to really see him, but we'd hit the golf ball and things like that on Sunday. My mom was a good worker, hardly ever missed a day of work, never missed church, came from, born in Queens, New York. Excellent, you know, just a fantastic person, but it was her drinking originally that kind of, you know, I could have gotten here to Al-Anon quite a while ago. I got here in 97, but I didn't get a sponsor till 98, so 98's my birthday, okay? So it was her drinking. Her MO was come home from work, throw some dinner together, you know, get out the either the early times, but when my dad made a little bit more money, it was Jack Daniels. Sit down with a crossword puzzle. She loved crossword puzzles. She loved going to the Dodger games and keeping score. I mean, that was heaven for her. And then usually fall asleep in the chair, cigarette, and you know, and some she'd wake up and go to bed. But pretty much everyone was, you know, on their own in that house. And as a result, you know, we have these memories. They're probably not very accurate, but I don't really remember the word love or a lot of emotions being thrown around. And so today, I went years without the love word leaving my lips. You know, today, it's great. You know, I love all you guys. I have a great time. I have a lovely wife. But I'm still, I hate to say this, but I'm still kind of a cold fish. You know, I still have a hard time saying, you know, this is a beautiful room or showing some emotions. You know, I'm just not an emotional kind of guy. That's just kind of who I am. But Al-Anon is really helping in that area. And if you're out there and you are kind of like that, that doesn't mean that we don't have feelings and emotions. We do. I mean, I have a lot of them. I just don't let them out. And my wife and I have a friend named Chris. And if she sees me, she'll say, "You're having a feeling." And on a lucky night, I'll have a feeling. At a meeting, it's like, I'll have a feeling. And that's pretty cool. I really enjoy that. But, you know, I just made it through school. I'm not going to tell you what happened when I was 2 years old because I can't remember what was going on at 2 years old or 3 years old. I just can't do that. It was just the whole growing up was kind of a blank, basically. Played a lot of sports. Wasn't a very good student. Just made it through. Went to school. Had some good relationships, but I always, you know, ended them for one reason or another. But mostly because I just couldn't commit. That was about it. You know, my dad was a good worker, but he wasn't very loyal, or, you know, he had a lot of things going on the side when he was up in L.A. And he'd introduce us to these ladies, and I didn't know who they were as a kid, but it was later on I found out, you know, this is the woman he's shacked up with or whatever. And I don't know whether my mom drank because he was up in L.A. doing what he was doing. I don't know if he was up there doing what he was doing because she was home drinking. I don't know. I'm still not smart enough to figure that out, but... So I made it through, teenager, early 20s, had some relationships. And you know the Seinfeld, you know, where George says, you know, it's not you, it's me. And I can tell you, if an Al-Anon's telling you, it's not you, it's me, it's true. It's not you, it's me. And I also don't talk about God a lot, even though I'm on my knees in the morning and at night, and I just thoroughly have blind faith in this higher power. But I know there's a God in my life because he introduced me to my wife. And for some reason, I just thought, this one's going to work, you know. I think I can commit to this one. And I asked her to marry me after 5 years. She'd already been married twice. This was number one for me. And so she was in no hurry to get married. And I was in no hurry to get married after seeing what my dad was doing and other things going on. So we finally did the deal and got married. And, you know, when we first met, she didn't introduce me to her son, for at least a few months, I would say. And then she brings him, you know, I go over to her house one day and say, hey, here's my son. And cute kid, blonde hair, glasses, you know, smart as a whip. And we had a good relationship, and we still do. Because of Al-Anon, we still do, basically. And he was around 8, so I missed all the diapers and stuff like that. I can't relate to that kind of stuff. You know, and then he had those strange behaviors, you know, in junior high. He'd be on the honor roll list 1 year, and then he'd be suspended half the year the next year. And it was up and down and up and down. And I'd go to work. I recognized there was some sort of a problem, and I'd go to work. And I worked down by Balboa, down in Newport Beach. And I had this view of the back bay, or the bay. And I'd sit there, and what am I going to say today, and how am I going to say it to straighten this kid out? And so I'd go home, and I'd say it, and it wouldn't work. So that was plan A. So then I'd move to plan B. You know, the plan A was lecture, logic. Logic is going to fix this thing. So plan B was, I'm going to pull like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, push him against the wall and tell him, you better straighten up or you're out of here. And okay, so that didn't work. So then I go to plan C, and that didn't work. And then I go to plan D, and that didn't work. And by plan D, I figured, you know, I don't think I gave A really a good shot. So I'd go back and try A again. And then I'd try B again and see, and it was just, you know, trying to fix alcohol and drugs. That's what he was on, alcohol and drugs. He's a real alcoholic. I mean, right out of the book, he's a real alcoholic. But I'm sitting there at work. It's to be honest with you, there's a pizza parlor. Okay, I had this pizza parlor down there at the beach. And I'm throwing a few pizzas, and I'm just trying to figure out a plan E and a plan F. And it's just not coming. It's just not coming. And it occurred to me, it's never going to come. And this is before Al-Anon. And my shoulders dropped, and I just realized, I can't win this battle. It's just not going to happen. So I step back. I let things run its course. A week later, we get a note. We go home on a Friday after work, and there's a note on the kitchen table. He's 15. I need some space. And I'll let you guys know where I am, and I'll come back when I'm ready, and all that kind of stuff. And so we looked at that and really didn't do too much about it. But we did over the weekend. We did change the locks. We did do that. And, you know, our literature, I love our Al-Anon literature. I love the AA literature. I love Al-Anon literature. And, you know, it talks about getting that phone call at, you know, early in the morning. And so Thursday or something, we get this phone call from the Costa Mesa Police Department, you know, come up and pick up your kid. We've got him here. Because his alcoholic brain was working overtime, and he and a buddy of his were going to break into a cigar shop, steal all the merchandise, and that was going to fund their fuel, their gas, and they were going to take off towards Northern California, have a grand old time. But the men in blue got there first. And so we go over there, and the sergeant or whoever was on duty, he's saying, man, this guy was awesome. It was such a great lecture. I just wish I would have loved this one. And he's in a uniform, and I figured, this is it. this is really going to work. And no, it didn't work. So, fortunately, before we got there, this is the really first time that my wife and I really communicated about the issue. And we both agreed that if he wasn't willing to get some help, he wasn't coming home. Okay. And sometimes when I do panels, I love panels. I was talking to Roger. About a year into the program, I started a panel where he got sober. And I've been doing that for 15 years. And unfortunately, they've run out of money or something, so my panel's getting shut down. But if you haven't been on a panel, get on board. I mean, panels are just fantastic. So we go pick him up, like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm driving. This is important because I'm the one behind the wheel. I'm the stepdad. I have a ton of detachment. She's got all the compassion. I got all the detachment. So we're driving home and we say, okay, what's your plan? You know, what do you want to do now? And he says, well, he's been on the street for a week, what he calls urban camping. And he can show you, even today, see that tree over there? I stayed there for like 2 nights. And he loved it. There's no responsibility, all the freedom in the world, and it was just awesome. But the thing was, he had been arrested, and he knew he was going to have to face a judge. So on the way home, we said, okay, what do you want to do? Come home, get something to eat, take a shower, go to bed. And that's not what we agreed on. So we said, okay, well, you know what? That's really not what's going to happen. Do you want some recovery or not? And he said, no. And so I pulled the car over at 4:30 in the morning and said, there's the door. And he got out. And I hesitate to share that at panels because a lot of the people in the panels are really new and raw. But here I feel pretty safe about saying that. Before Al-Anon, we don't know about abandoning your kid or anything. We just had to do it. And it let him out. We told him, the high school's about 2 miles that way. Our phone number. Give us a call when you want some help. And it was still another 2 or 3 days before we heard from him. And fortunately, he had made a connection with a high school counselor. And so we went over to the high school, and he agreed to go into some recovery and a rehab. And we didn't think about it. We didn't go home, think about it overnight. Let's ponder, let's pray on it. No. We went to Save On, got a toothbrush, some shampoo, and just took him right there and dropped him off. And that's where his recovery started. Not our recovery, but that's where his recovery started. And that's where, the counselors, if you've ever been in rehabs, the counselors, this is an adolescent rehab. They're always saying, go to Al-Anon, you guys need to go to Al-Anon. And my wife and I both agreed we were never going to go to Al-Anon. Because my checkbook was being constantly drained of money because of this rehab. They have diplomas on the walls. They can fix this thing. We knew nothing about alcoholism. We just figured we're going to do our homework. We had the homework like, I hate you when you do this, I love you when you do that. And we did it, and we went on Monday. Monday was just the parents. Thursday was the parents and the kids together in the same room, and they put the kids in the hot seat. And I swear, I think these kids just try to outdo each other. One guy's just smoking pot, the next guy's smoking pot and doing heroin, the next guy's smoking pot, doing heroin and doing speed. And each one just gets gradually worse and worse and worse to try to, like, I'm the worst guy in the room. So we did that, and we went on the weekends, and we never went to Al-Anon. We just, no way. We got things to do. What else do you want from me? You got my money, you got my Mondays, you got my Thursdays, fix this kid. So he came home, and he really worked a program. He was working a program. He got hooked up with some young guys in AA. He was going to meetings. He was doing the deal, and we were doing the same old thing. We were, my wife, she had really a hard time sleeping until he got home, and she'd be looking underneath our door to see if there was any light underneath his door. And she will admit she thought she had ESP, but because she was listening at the door. So we were just as sick as ever. We had no recovery. We didn't know what to do. So finally, he comes home one night, and he's blonde. He's just a towhead. And as soon as he gets into rehab, everything's game, fair game. You know, he's chain smoking. His hair's black. He's got spiked hair. Then he shaves it off, and he's got black hair. Then he's got black hair with red flames in it. Then he's got like a Dennis Rodman. He's got brown hair with leopard spots in it. And my wife's sponsor looks at it and goes, "That's pretty neat." You know, and we're looking like you got to be kidding. This is the end of the world. You know, how can someone be sober and look like this? And we were trying to figure out who these guys picking him up with the tattoos and the old beat up pickup trucks. And, you know, I want guys with BMWs and Porsches, you know, with suits and ties. We were totally in the dark. And so he comes home this one night. He's got black leather bondage pants with chains in between the legs, so he can only walk about this far. He's got about a 6-inch stride. Clang, 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 clang. That was it. That was our bottom. I think we got to a meeting that night. Our first meeting was at Hogue Hospital in Newport Beach, and I went to that meeting for years and years and years, and that meeting drove me crazy because it doesn't start until 8. It doesn't start till 8. It's not over till 9:30. You know, you gotta start a meeting like this. When you start a meeting, you get to pick the time. And I think 7 o'clock is awesome. You know, I can be home by 9 eating a bowl of ice cream. I can get my recovery and my dessert. I think that's great. But 8 o'clock, you know, that's kind of pushing it. But I did it, and I went, because that was our first meeting. And I'd go, and my wife, oh my goodness, she caught on fire right away. She was just like crazy for Al-Anon. She got these things called a sponsor. And the crazy thing, she wanted to get to the meeting early. How crazy is that? And she wanted to stay after the meeting and talk to people. The Hogue was about 3 miles from our house. We took 2 cars. Because I wanted to be the last person in the door and the first person out of the door. So here's the wife, she's getting recovery, the kid's getting recovery, and I'm left. You know, I'm just hanging out. And so finally I figured, okay, I gotta get to some meetings. So I started going to some meetings where she was going, and she was going to meetings, Willie knows. It's like literally 100 women and me. But I tell you, I learned a lot at that meeting. One of the things I learned is that if I'm going to get a sponsor, I got to go to a different meeting. So I'm not a big fan of focus meetings. You know, we're supposed to focus on the similarities, not the differences. But I started going to a men's stag. I think, you know, women's stag and men's stags are, you know, pretty good. But I hope the guys that go to this men's stag are still going to mixed meetings, because mixed meetings are where it's at. It's like getting recovery through a straw. You're only hearing it from the male perspective. And I had to hear it from wives and husbands and parents, and it all, you know, we say, take what you like and leave the rest. But I got to take it all in, because I don't know when I'm going to need it. And so I started going to men's stags, I got a sponsor, started working the steps, things started to, you know, jive a little bit. He's still doing the deal, I'm starting to work the steps. And you know, I'm gonna have, before Al-Anon, I had absolutely no opinions. Today, I've got some opinions, okay? And you can leave them here, I don't care. But, you know, step 8 says, made a list of people we had harmed, and I didn't really understand I was harming people. You know, I like it when I hear the alcoholic share, I thought I was only hurting myself. And then the light bulb goes off and it's like, oh my goodness, I'm hurting my wife and my kids and the people I work with. And well, it works the same with me. I'm not just hurting myself. I'm hurting my wife and the kid and everyone around me also. And I was a huge isolator. And if isolation is not a victimless crime, I'm hurting a lot of people by isolating. There are actually people out there that want me to be a part of their lives. And just like everyone in this room, there are people in your lives that really want you to participate in their lives. And when I'm isolating, I'm harming myself. I'm not doing anything for God. I'm not doing anything for them. So isolating, you know. So this didn't occur to me, this, you know, harming others until a few years. But I got busy with the steps, and I started working quickly. So I started in January. I had my fourth step done by April. I don't think fourth step needs to be like a career move. My opinion is, you know, Al-Anon is for me. It's for me to get better. But Al-Anon is also for me to help the alcoholic by getting out of his way so he can find some sobriety. I think one of the biggest people who, I am one of the biggest roadblocks to long-term sobriety, because I can get in there and mess up sobriety. The first Thanksgiving, he was going to a lot of meetings, so the first Thanksgiving, he started around April, this time of year. Thanksgiving comes around, he says, "I'm going to a meeting." We looked at each other like, "What? You gotta be kidding, it's Thanksgiving. You gotta stay home with the family." And I didn't realize until months later or years later that he's not gonna stay sober staying home with the family on Thanksgiving. So a few years later, the tables got kind of turned and we started going to meetings on Thanksgiving. And he said, "Well, when's Thanksgiving?" And we said, "Well, you can come over, but you gotta be out here by 7 because we got a meeting to go to." So I'm working the steps. I get to 6, I do 6, I do 7, I do 8, I do 9, and it's June. Now I can always go back and redo them, you know, okay? So it's not like a one-time deal. And I'm making amends to my dad, and this is in January, and in July, he drops dead. Just like that. It was nothing like he's got 30 days, he has terminal cancer, you need to spend as much time. It was like lights out. Now, if it's taking me 10 years, I'm not taking anyone's inventory, okay? But if it's taking me a long time to do my steps, some people just aren't going to be around for me to make amends to. I'm not going to be around to make amends. And I have other brothers and sisters, and they still feel like they have some unfinished business with him. With me, my slate is clean. I told him I loved him. I don't think I ever told him that in my entire life. Although I was looking through my dresser drawer and I came out, I found this, it was probably like fourth grade. You know, it was one of those paper things with the lines that are really wide. And it says like, "Happy Valentine's Day, I love you." I was like, whoa, I really did say that. That's, you know, but I said it as an adult. He didn't know what to do. I gave him a hug and, you know, we parted ways and stuff. But I just feel today, my mom died before Al-Anon. She died in 88. And I was still a shut down, cold fish, emotionless, you know. But when my dad died, I had feelings. It was really cool. And I had a commitment that night. It was, I think he died on a Monday or Tuesday. Tuesday morning, I got the call from his current wife. I don't know what number it was, but it was his current wife. And that night I had a meeting and I had a commitment. I was at that meeting. And I didn't share. I just said my name and I just sat there. But going out to Palm Springs to be with him or whoever wasn't going to help me. But going to an Al-Anon meeting was going to help. And I got my butt to an Al-Anon meeting and I fulfilled my commitment. And, you know, it's things like that that I had to learn in Al-Anon. And so we're all working the program, and 18 months later, he has a slip and a relapse, and the sponsor goes in, and you got to tell your parents, and we do that deal. And we tell them, you know, you got to be here if you're going to be sober. You can only be here if you're going to be sober. And then eventually, just before 18, he's got his own schedule. When he turned 18, he was done with school. So he was out of there. But I had court duty. I had a very flexible schedule, and my wife had an 8-to-5. So I had court duty. You know, he'd been arrested. He was convicted. He had time hanging over his head. And so I had to go in every, you know, like 6, 7, 8 months and do this checkup. And I knew this one checkup just wasn't going to go well. And so we went in there. And in juvenile court, it's just you and the judge. There's no one else allowed. It's juvenile court. And the prosecutor is saying, well, he may be sober, but he's not doing this, he's not doing that, he's not doing this. And then the public defender, and we actually talked to the alcoholic, the 15-year-old, what kind of representation do you want? We all agreed, public defender. The public defender gives her spiel. And because it's juvenile court, you don't have a judge, you have a referee or a commissioner. So the stepdad, I'm in there, and the judge, the commissioner or referee looks at me and says, well, what do you think? And I'm just there as a taxi cab. You know, I'm just transportation. And I'm speechless, but I brought my literature, and I was out in the hallway reading it, and I just said, you know what, I agree with what this person said, and I agree with what this person said. And the judge said, 30 days. Put him in handcuffs, like that. And as they were walking him out, he turns around and says, Pete, I love you. And I said, you know, I love you too. And he said that because he knew he wasn't going to juvenile hall because of anything we did. He was working a program. He knew he was going because of things he was doing and things he wasn't doing. And so we would go and visit him, no real tears or anything, no emotional breakdowns, because he knew why he was there. And that's just, you know, one example of the things that we went through. One night I come home from work, one afternoon, and I walk into his room, and he's got these, they're like 6-inch balls. They're blue, white, and red. And they are shoved into his bedroom wall. There's probably a dozen of them. And I looked at him, and I knew what they were. Maybe some of you know what they were. And I said, well, that's pretty neat. Where'd you get those things? And he said, we found them in the trash. So I go down, and I go down and start doing some work. And he comes down, the program's working in him. He says, no, I lied. We stole them from the golf course. They're the tee markers on each tee. They went out there during the night and stole all the markers. And they have spikes in them about that long and just shoved them into the wall. Whoa! And, but I didn't try to nail them. I didn't try to trap them. I just let it go. And he brought them down. And I probably had a minor slip. I said, okay, put them in a baggie. I'll take them over for you. So I just anonymously dropped them at the golf course. But, you know, his room was a disaster. It's like a nuclear bomb went off. But my wife and I, we had this theory that when he moves out, there's nothing a painter and some new carpet won't fix. So we would just close the door. We ignore his room. You know, his sobriety or whatever was his business. And we went out of business. He moved out. We started work in the program. We had meetings in our house, family meetings. And we had a family meeting, and we said, okay, you've got a totally different schedule than we do. You're 18 in a couple of months. What do you think about you moving out? And there was no crosstalk, no interruptions. Everyone got the chance to share, say their piece, shut up, and listen. And he says, I think that's a good idea. I'll be out of here in like 3 months. And, of course, now my wife and I are thinking, well, we got to go to the grocery store and get the renter's guide. We got to get the classified section and bring it home and circle rooms for rent. But we did nothing of that, none of that. And 1 week before his deadline, he packed up and moved out on his own accord. And he did try to move back once. He came back about a year later with everything in the back of his truck. And he said, I got nowhere to go. I've been kicked out of my roommate has kicked me out. I got nowhere to go. I got everything in the truck. And what do you think, Mom and Dad? Can I move back in? And it was the mom who said, no, it's Saturday night. There's a meeting at Hogue, big AA meeting. Used to be called the Gucci meeting. I don't know if it still is. Go down there, see what you can figure out. He went down there, hooked up with his old sponsor. His old sponsor said, you can live with me for six days and then find new place to live. He did that. He said, I want to go to sober living. Another thing that we learned in Al-Anon is there's more than just a yes or no. There's a yes, but for this amount of time or for this amount of money. And we say, we're going to do sober living for you for 3 weeks. That's it. Then you got to figure it out. And of course, we pay the house. Don't pay him. Pay the house. Okay. We stopped leaving money around. We had to stop leaving our wallets and jewelry around. Not because, and this is a distinction that just occurred to me recently. It's not because I don't trust him. I don't trust alcoholism. You know, the alcoholic is not the enemy. It's alcoholism. It's so strong in him that he will do things that normally he would never, ever, ever do. But because he's got that ism, and we had to respect that ism, so we went and bought a hotel safe, and we put all our stuff in there, and that's where it stayed, because of that ism. And so, you know, another quick story is, he was turning 18. He didn't want to get his license until he was 18, but he wanted to get a car. And I thought, well, if he gets a car, he'll be moving out a lot sooner if he has a car. Always thinking of myself. And so, okay, we're going to go Beach Boulevard. I don't know what you got up here, but Beach Boulevard is just like one auto dealer after another, after another, after another. We went there on Sunday. We went up one side and down the other. Couldn't find anything. During the middle of the week, you know, you get that feeling you regret, like, there's something about this that just isn't sitting well. And what didn't sit well is that I was going to co-sign on this loan. And Al-Anon's given me the courage to change my mind. And so I sat down with him one night, and I said, you know what, I just cannot, because my wife's first sponsor says, do not pay any attention to what they say. Watch what they do. He said a lot, but he did nothing. So I sat down with him. I said, you know what? I can't co-sign on this car. And he was in tears. It wasn't good news. But 24 hours later, he came home with a car. It had insurance. It was registered. And it didn't require my name. If the alcoholic wants something, they're going to get it. I'm a name on a list. Boom, boom, boom. And if he really wants it, he's going to figure it out. And he figured it out. And today, he's sober. If you're going to judge my program by his sobriety, I'm pretty much a failure. Because he stopped, probably around 20, he just went out and never came back. But fortunately, we don't judge our program by the alcoholic's sobriety. The only way I can judge my program is what would I be like without program, and what would I be like, what am I today with program? And about 2.5 years ago, he tried to get sober a few times, his girlfriend told us, but he just couldn't make it stick. And this one time, about 2.5 years ago, he said, I'm serious, he's going to get sober. And he detoxed himself at home. Got the DTs, convulsions, fell in the bathroom and broke some vertebrae, ended up in UCI Medical Center because he tried to detox himself. So we get a phone call again, first thing in the morning, you know, he's in UCI, we go up there, it was ugly. I think I'm going to have a feeling here. It was ugly. He reeked of cigarettes. You know, it's the old shake and bake. He's in there with broken vertebrae, just trying to get out of his bed. And they had to, I don't know the term, you know, they knock him out, put him on a respirator. And he's tied down in his bed. And even knocked out, he's just like doing this. And I couldn't take it. I had to leave the room. It was really, I can still smell it and feel it. It was just horrible. But if that's his bottom, I don't know. But he's been sober ever since, been 2.5 years. He quit high school at the age of 31. It was important enough to him, not to us, to him to go back. He got his GED. He did so well in the GED that they asked him to, be assistant teacher. I forget the term for that. And now he's going to some college courses at Middle Tennessee. He lives back in Tennessee now. And he's doing the deal. He's not going to AA, but he's doing the deal, and we're trying to help him out as best as we can without overstepping that line. And, if it wasn't for Al-Anon, like I said, my wife, we're sitting in this meeting with 100 women and me, and she puts up her hand and shares, last week when I left work, I was turning right instead of left, and I was leaving town. I had never heard this before. I'm thinking, whoa, she's leaving me with the kid? But she realized that that's not what she wanted. She came back. And the tool that worked for us the best, the two tools that I don't think alcoholism has, can defeat, is consistency and unity. And we had to start working as a team with some unity. And I don't care if we're talking about your husband or your wife, you're not married, I got a sponsor I can have unity with, I got a home group I can have unity with, I've got a phone list I can talk to people. It's that unity and consistency that alcoholism has no defense for. And because as long as chaos is well and alive, there is no hope for any sanity in any home. As long as we're, leaning one way or the other, as long as I'm making decisions for my wife without talking to her first, and I did that, their alcoholism is going to run rampant. But it wasn't until my wife and I started working together and doing the deal, and that's why we're still married today, because of Al-Anon and the principles of Al-Anon. And I love everything that's up here. I love service. Talking to Willie and, a lot of guys in here I know from service, but the traditions, the concepts, the steps, they all work. Even the concepts will work. If my wife comes to me and says, I'm painting the kitchen pink, and I say, okay, go for it, and she does, I've lost my right of to bitch, basically. And that's in the concepts, so I have to be careful when I say, go for it. I got right of participation over there. But we use tradition 7. My wife was packing a lunch every day, and he was always looking for money, 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 money. And we said, okay, 60 days, because, we go to an Al-Anon meeting, we hear something, and we go, yeah, I'm going to start that tonight. We've been doing it for 30 years, but we're going to stop it tonight. And we figured that's not quite fair. So we said, okay, 60 days, no more money. 59 days, there's money. 60 days, no more money. On the 61st day, he had a job. I am not exaggerating. We got to get out of the way and let these kids and these people grow up. And so, I was going to read today's page, but I'm pretty much out of time. If you got some time to read, if you haven't read your pages today, shame on you, first thing. Because it says in the welcome, daily reading of Al-Anon literature. Okay, but today on June 5th, for those listening to this on tape, June 5th, one day at a time, and my wife taught me to go back and put look at the index and put at the top of the page the topic for the day. So today's topic is courage. So every day I can look there. And this talks about how we use martyrdom to try to find some. I just need another minute. Okay. We need courage to believe that no situation is hopeless, to keep cheerful when we have cause for despair, to resist the impulse to complain to others about our sorry lot. It takes a lot of courage to resist the temptation to take over the alcoholic's responsibilities until we accept the fact we're only hindering them. Above all, it takes courage not to appear courageous, as so many of us do. hoping for sympathy from relatives, friends, and neighbors. Poor little woman. You know, it says, this may be food for the self-pitying ego, but it weakens character. And I tell you, that's how I lived. I was always looking for attention. I have a letter at home from about the 1968 United States Winter Olympics. And I always looking for, I wanted to be Eric Clapton, but I didn't want to do the work, I just wanted to be Eric Clapton. So I figured, if I'm in the Olympics, I'm going to get some attention. And what's the easiest sport in the Olympics? Luge. So I'm going to become a luge person, you know. This is where my brain goes. And that's what alcoholism does to us. Where can I find some attention? But, you know, I love tradition 12 because I like to say, it should say humility, not anonymity, because anonymity is humility at work. So for those who set up the chairs and aren't looking for recognition, for those who are doing the panels who aren't looking for recognition, for those who are being sponsors and not looking for recognition, that's where it's at. Really, it's more important for me to protect my own anonymity. Be of service, stay small. You know, I'm really happy to be here today. This is awesome. I love 7 o'clock, let's rock. You know, I love the enthusiasm. We're not just sitting around like, when is this meeting over? This is a great meeting. I appreciate you putting up with me, and I'm sorry I ran over, but, you know, once I get going, I can't stop. So thanks for letting me share.